I think why I've always loved this work is I was able to help my mother become, you know, in a small way, the dynamic woman that she is. And for me, there's no purer gift or love than that. Doing that for others and for women of color especially, it just fills my soul.
Welcome to the Rise with Diana podcast, the podcast for working women leaders who are dedicated to doing the greatest work in a sound body, mind, and spirit. I'm Diana Patton, ex-corporate executive and civil rights attorney turned entrepreneur and business coach, helping working women leaders to gain the confidence to speak up and advocate for themselves and take uncomfortable action through daily disciplined practices to experience true life success without sacrificing their sanity. It wasn't that long ago that I was taking things way too personal, secretly having something to prove, and doing my best to fake it like I had it all together. I thought the appearance of success was the glue holding my life together. But it was that appearance of success and hustling to prove my worth that was ruining my life. In this podcast, my goal is to teach you the tried and true secrets of living your greatest authentic life. You with me? Let's get ready to rise. Okay, everyone. Hello. Welcome to the Rise with Diana podcast. I love that you all have been following along and, you know, sharing your thoughts about how certain people have just touched you. And I'm going to tell you something. I've really been meeting great women. And let me tell you something. I feel when you are intentional about the people that you meet, you will attract them into your life. And so we have a dynamic woman leader who, you all know, we like to bring people from all aspects of life. Diversity is everything we are all about, and everything we are all about is doing our greatest work. And I couldn't think of anyone else to be doing that than Dr. Aroa Chang. Okay, first of all, you know, the name by itself, y'all hear my R's? Do y'all hear these R's?
They're rolling
in the cut.
Like a native speaker.
Come on, baby. So go ahead and share with our listeners a little bit about you, and then I'll go into detail more about why I think we have been manifesting each other.
All right, let's do it. Well, thank you for having me, yes. Diane. You know, from the moment I met you, I became your biggest fan, so I continue to feel that way.
Likewise.
Yeah, so I like to say that I'm a once undocumented immigrant turned hyper-documented academic, which basically means, you know, I went from having no documents to having tons of documents and publications.
That's good.
And that's turned into a passion for me around storytelling and really uplifting people's voices,
yes,
particularly women of color, through writing. And that's sort of been the impetus for my business. I was a professor before this and a million other jobs, as many of you probably can attest to also. And so, but I landed about a year and a half ago, I decided, you know what, I'm burnt out in academia. I feel constrained. I feel like I can't be creative. I feel like I have to ask permission to do almost anything. And I can't work that way.
Yeah.
I can't be my best, most authentic self that way. So, you know, I leapt out on faith and things have been going well. So, and like you said, just meeting kindred spirits, being in a new community of entrepreneurs, and just really trusting myself. This is the year of energy and of really trusting the decisions that I make.
I know that's right. Y'all know, for those who are my avid listeners, you guys like, oh, you guys were definitely supposed to meet. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I want to unpack a little bit more of your background. You said you went from undocumented to documented. Share a little bit more of that backstory, because I really do believe our stories really do matter. So let's dive in a little bit about, you know, how you then came to this place. You said undocumented. What does that mean?
So undocumented means I didn't have the legal paperwork necessary to be in this country, which, you know, many people will term that differently as illegal alien. Mm-hmm. I don't like that word because mm-hmm. I don't think any person is illegal.
And that's right.
I know that migration is a natural occurrence, and it's also a God-given right to mm-hmm. be able to move from place to place. I mean, you go back to the beginning of time.
Yes.
And this is something that the only reason people limit this is because they want to create artificial borders to empower people that usually already have tons of power and doing lots of damage. So so I was born in Guatemala, which mm-hmm. is in Central America, the largest country there. And to make a long story short, we were in a civil war. Guatemala was in a civil war mm-hmm. for many, many decades. And my parents felt the need to leave for their family. And so my parents immigrated to California and then brought us with them. And thinking, you know, we came on a visa. So yeah. basically on a plane, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and we overstayed the visa. So, mm-hmm. And then I became a naturalized citizen when I was 19 mm-hmm. years old. And the way that happened was through legislation. So through when Reagan was president, he passed an amnesty bill in, I believe it was 1985. Mm-hmm. And if you met certain requirements, then you came into the country in a certain kind of way and without any, you know, criminal records, that kind of thing, then you had amnesty or freedom. You were given citizenship. It. So I was, you know, so when I think about that, I think about destiny and being lucky mm-hmm. Because I did nothing. It was nothing that I did that allowed me to stay here. And so I have to take advantage of every opportunity. And I have through education. You know, I grew up in Richmond, California, which is a super diverse mm-hmm. city. Also a city at the time with a lot of crime. And my high school went bankrupt, in fact, my school district when I was a senior yeah. year in high school. And so for 6 months, we didn't go to school. Mm-hmm. And so I got a part-time job. And then after that, I went to Berkeley and Stanford and got my PhD at UT Austin. That's the hyper-documented part. Mm-hmm. And really, I've always had a love of reading, of writing, mm-hmm. Of storytelling, of teaching. And mm-hmm. so, and all of my siblings, my five siblings, are all college-educated professionals. Mm-hmm. My mother, who was an undocumented mom of six, she recently retired as the CEO of her own charter school mm-hmm. in Richmond, which she led for 20 years. So we have quite a dynamic group in our family. And, you know, the idea, I think, for all of us is to leverage our capital for mm-hmm. good, mm-hmm. you know, and to, you know, give as much as we can to others. I grew up with that kind of social justice spirit in my household. And so that's a bit more about my background.
I love that. Can y'all just go, I know that's right. Say it. I hear, I know that's right, because this is why I attract these beautiful, amazing, rich, wealthy people in story, in life, and diversity, and the love of just humanity. And I'm just so grateful that you have exploded on the scene. What are your superpowers? What would you say makes you, you know, sing?
I think my superpowers are compassion, mm-hmm. Authenticity, and recognizing the gifts in others. Mm. Those three things are a really wildly beautiful combination when you're helping someone write their story or edit an article or write their book. I really enjoy being a silent partner with others in uplifting them. And by a lot of times I feel like when you say silent, people think meek or think you're not out there, you know. And I don't see it that way. You know, I really think that I love to be the supportive person in a relationship, especially in a professional relationship. There's just something very magical about that. And so, you know, what I do is, you know, I like to think of myself as like a writing whisperer.
Yeah.
And so I, you know, I help academics and professionals really identify, develop, uplift, amplify their voice through writing. And that's through editing, but it's also through coaching, and it's also through ghostwriting. So that's always where my heart has been. And, you know, it all started because when my mom went back to school in her 40s with six kids, we actually went to college at the same time, not at the same place, but at the same time. So of course, she would ask me to edit her papers. And I really developed a talent for that, especially for people whose language is not, their first language is not English.
Right.
So then her friends would ask me, and then her, and so, you know, it's just amazing to me how those gifts and that capital come from need.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
And so that's sort of the foundation of, I think, why I've always loved this work, because I was able to help my mother become, you know, in a small way, the dynamic woman that she is.
And,
you know, there's nothing for me, there's no purer gift or love than that, you know, to have been a small, you know, part of that. And so doing that for others and for women of color, especially, is just, it just fills my soul.
You know, it's really, that is, you know, what the way you just described that is really me in so many ways. Because I feel this is why we're so kindred, in that we really want to help people shine.
Exactly.
We want to let you know that there's this beauty inside of you. Here's my gift to let your gift come alive, right?
Exactly.
And so that explains a lot. And when you say silent partner, really a friend, an ally, a supporter, a mentor, that's what their jobs really are, really. Anytime someone tries to railroad someone to say, oh, I did this for you, I did this for you, really, honestly, at the end of the day, it sounds like it might be more self-serving.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. You're absolutely right.
Tell me a story of how you saw this come alive as Dr. Chang. What were you, say, describe some of the students that you've encountered and the ways in which you saw your gifting come to life. You probably have millions.
I do, because I've been in education, you know, for almost 30 years now.
Right.
So started off as a high school teacher. So, you know, I think...
30 years. You said 30 years?
30 years,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that's beautiful.
When I was 22, that's when I was a high school teacher. I was almost the same age as the students I was teaching. And then, and now 52. Yeah, exactly 30 years.
Wow.
So, you know what? I'm thinking of one student in particular when I was working and teaching at Beloit College in Wisconsin. It's a really small private liberal arts school. And I was the director of the McNair Scholars Program there, which is a program federally funded that helps traditionally underrepresented students pursue doctoral degrees. And she was not in my program because she was undocumented at the time. Well, she took a class that I was teaching on Latino identity or Latinx identity. And one of the assignments, the final assignment I had for the class, was for students to enter this short film contest. Mm-hmm. And I wanted it to focus on, you know, their kind of road to their Latinx identity. Mm-hmm. Well, she was so interested and she was so into it. And she made a beautiful video, submitted it to the film festival, and won.
Oh, wow.
However, because her story was about her being undocumented, she was very reticent to show it,
yes.
Right? Because that would be exposing herself. So yeah. What we ended up doing was having a big kind of community meeting with her family and just talking about, you know, what are the ramifications of this? Is this something that, you know, because the option was we can give you first place and not show the film. And that's all that. Long story short, they decided that they were going to take the chance. And so the film was presented. She was there. She was honored. And what was amazing about that was I felt a deep responsibility to not put her in a precarious position, right?
Yeah.
But I also wanted to give her agency.
Right.
You know, many times we don't allow people to make their own decisions.
Yes.
And so she decided to, it came out, it was powerful, it was amazing. Now she's in law school.
Wow.
And since then, become documented. I was a sponsor for her when she was going through the citizenship process. But, you know, it's a testament to the opportunity to literally tell your story mm-hmm. and showcase it, and that people have the power to do what they want mm-hmm. with their stories, you mm-hmm. know, and that there, even when there's real risk involved, I feel that people that I work with are just so hungry to deliver their story to others. And of course it uplifts so many other people. So that's one example, but yeah. My goodness, you know, I've taught a lot of people, so.
Well, that says a lot because at the end of the day, you hit it. First of all, we're talking about you being your authentic self, having agency, speaking truth to power, speaking and releasing generational trauma. You know, all of these wrapped up together can change the trajectory of not only that person's life, but their family's life. What was and these are critical turning points in people's lives. What was a critical mm-hmm. turning point in your life that made you go, I need to, or have you always been this authentic?
I think, you know, it's been a journey. I do think my ultimate life journey is to be as authentic as I can. Mm-hmm. That's the goal for me. And every day I'm kind of working at it. Mm-hmm. I think when I think about a critical turning point, I mean, one of them was realizing that I was undocumented because mm-hmm. I didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
In undocumented families, sometimes you don't really talk about things. And when you're a kid, your normal is whatever's going on around you. You know, you don't know that from anybody else's life. So when I learned for sure that I was undocumented, or when it was, I should say not, I learned it a little bit before then, but it was when I realized the consequence of it was when I was in high school and I entered a contest for Girl State. Mm-hmm. People don't know, it's a big government program and it's kind of like the model UN,
uh-huh.
but or like that on a state level.
Yeah.
And it's called Girl State and it's very prestigious. And long story short, I was the finalist and I won. And one day I was in class and on the loudspeaker, the principal asked to talk to me. And I was thrilled because I knew that what this was about, which was about this prize that I had won. But when the principal talked to me, he told me that unfortunately, because they realized I didn't have a social security number and that I was undocumented, that I was ineligible to receive it. Mm-hmm. And so that for me, and so then my friend Charisse got it, which was great.
Yeah.
But I'll always remember it, you know. But that was like, oh my God, this is consequential. Like, I will be able to perform and be excellent, and that's not going to matter here.
Wow.
And so that was a critical turning point for me, because I knew that I was going to have to, even when I was working harder than anyone else or twice as hard, that I may still not reap the reward.
Yeah.
And so I had to find other reasons to be excellent, to be exceptional,
right.
to be, you know.
Yeah.
And so that, I think that was probably the beginning of a path of true authenticity for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I understood that I couldn't rely on external validation.
Right.
For me to be who I was meant to be, you know.
Right.
So.
Yeah, that's so good. You know, here's the thing. We got to release these ideas that my joy, my worth, my happiness comes from these external factors. It is a practice. Sounds like this really helped shift you into a positive way forward. You know, and I feel like that's really at the root of an authentic life, is to really understand that you can't rely upon that. For me, I call it God. I have a very spiritual relationship with God. How do you anchor yourself? How do you find yourself back to a center? What is it that you do? What do you practice that gives you that knowing?
So I think I have a pretty deep gratitude practice.
Yes.
I'm a huge fan of daily brief meditation.
Yes.
And mindfulness. Mm. And so, you know, I grew up in a very strict Catholic household, mm-hmm. But also with some kind of Asian kind of Buddhist Zen kind of principles,
yeah.
In there, since that's my background, is a mix. Mm-hmm. And I think one thing I always noticed about my parents is that they were very thoughtful people.
Mm.
They are very thoughtful people, like, you know, opposites in every way you can imagine, and even politically.
Mm.
But I always felt that there was so much depth to them as people, and that they just liked to think a lot. They liked to talk about issues, you know. And so for me, the practice is, what grounds me is collecting myself, breathing.
Yeah.
And a lot of times identifying when something is real and not real.
Well, honey, so you're going to be working hard lately, because everything seems...
Right. I think sometimes we make decisions or have actions based on what we think is going on.
Mm. Yeah.
When really, when we look at the facts, when we look at, wait a minute, what's the data in my life driving this belief?
Mm.
You're like, this is not matching.
Yeah.
This is not matching. And so doing a lot of that is really helpful for me, because if I go down a spiral of, oh, you know, maybe I shouldn't do this business anymore. Maybe I should go back to 9 to 5. And then I'm like, but wait a minute, let's look at the data here. Mm. You know, I'm making more money before than I did. I'm happier than I ever was.
Mm-hmm.
People are supporting me. I'm connecting to amazing people. So really, my thought about not doing this anymore isn't aligning with the facts.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm constantly in my life having to assess and adjust so that I'm actually seeing things as they are.
Come on.
And not in the way that I've sort of been conditioned.
Yes.
The woman of color to think of myself.
Come on, and you better so, preach. Because you know, y'all hear this? Y'all hear this? Because we need to capture this part right here, because this is a daily practice, right? She
Absolutely.
Said, looking at the data, what does this say? You know, from my mindset, I always think about this scripture that reminds me to think on things are true, noble, praiseworthy. I think on those things. And as a result, you probably get yourself from moving down, from shrinking down, right? And falling
That's right.
into this negative path. You know, it sounds like every single thing we talk about on the podcast, you do, and you're living. But I want to ask you this question, because I like to ask it of all guests, is do you feel now that you're doing your greatest work? Your greatest work really is you, right? I always say when you do your greatest work, you're working on yourself, and then you start to naturally move into the gifting that you've been called to do on this earth. Do you feel you're doing that great work?
I feel that I've always been on that path,
mm-hmm.
but that now I am really... So my dad gave me a nickname a long time ago. It was Macheteadora, which mm-hmm. is the woman in the jungle who uses her machete, that's mm-hmm. where that word comes from, to cut down that crazy wild brush to make a way, you know. And so I feel like my life has been cutting that down, but now I feel like there's open path.
Ooh.
You know, like there's really, like I've done a lot of that, and so rather than looking ahead and it's like brush and I can't really see what's ahead, now I feel like I can see the sun, I can see the horizon. There's not as many things blocking path. And so, but I think a lot of that has to do with the narrative that I now tell myself.
Mm-hmm.
I've been the same person. I just had a different narrative.
And
before.
That is?
I think before it was more of a victim narrative.
Mm-hmm.
Things happen to me.
Mm.
Why do things happen to me? Now it's an agentic narrative of like, this was meant to happen to me so that.
Yes.
And that. So for me, it's always a reframe
mm-hmm.
for me of being, of always arriving, as my mom always says, but of just being, again, just as authentic as I can, but always being mindful of the narrative I'm giving out to others. But more importantly, what am I telling myself about my possibilities? And that takes a lot of mindfulness, you know, because you have to stop yourself and be your own champion, you know. And so I think that's where the critical sort of mindset change has been for me, is to go from that feeling of like, why is everything happening to me? And this is, you know, terrible. And to like, you know what? These are powerful things that happen. And I'm going to reshape them into something amazing. And then also help others understand that their lives, you know, are just a pathway to, you know, their own greatness and feelings of fulfillment. Those things, you know, it's like people say, what is that saying about your mess being your story?
Oh, yeah, use your mess, transform your mess into your message. Robin Roberts says that a lot. That's what you
do
for people.
And that's what you know, that's our lives. I don't know anyone whose life hasn't been a mess at some point. And so
sometimes a hot mess.
right.
And that's
our own lives. So, yeah.
Beautiful. I love this. So, you know, we talk a lot about speaking up here in the Rise with Diana community. You know, why do you suspect it's so difficult for corporate women and women in general to speak up and advocate for themselves?
I think it's because women have been taught not to trust their instinct. And also have been taught that... to defer,
mm-hmm.
to let others be expert, to not think of our lived experiences as expertise.
Yes.
They are, but I think that we've just been socialized to be quiet and keep things inside, that we're not worthy of saying whatever we need to say, or that it has to be performed in a certain vernacular or with certain big words or whatnot. When, you know, being you is, and saying things as you say them, is always an invitation for others to do the same. So I just think it's something that, it's a bad pattern, but I feel lucky to know a lot of women like yourself who, you know, just don't abide by that. Mm-hmm. And we definitely need more pioneers, and women to just believe, you know, in who they are and in their voice. You know, it's very important.
You just described, I always ask our guests to help that young woman who's struggling. You know, she's really just trying to just, she seems like everything's against her. Everything's uphill battle. She's fighting every single day. What your father gave you, that title, the, you know, with the machete, that's her life, right? And I know that life because I felt that life. Like, I'm going to fight all the bad people. I'm going to do civil rights, and I'm just going to carry everybody off at the knees, and that's not the best way. And but then you have some people who've just found themselves in a corner, and they just don't say anything at all, and then they are just allowing life to just take them away. What words of advice do you have for her? She might be, you know, driving in her car right now, going to work, and just, you know, really tearing up as she's listening to this because she's just so exhausted. Or perhaps you have someone who's at home, it's Sunday night, and they're just thinking about, I don't even want to go to work tomorrow, right? What advice, what step, what's one step you'd give her to take? Because you take people to the promised land with your work, right? But there's a step, and I want you to counsel her right now.
So, I mean, the first thing I would say is you are not alone. Mm. You are never, ever, ever alone. Mm. You know, we're with you. There's an army of women that are behind you just because we know what it's like to be a woman of color in this world.
Yes.
The other thing I would say is, you know, the answer may be in stillness, that you don't have to react. You don't have to do something right away.
Yeah.
That maybe the response is time.
Ooh.
That the answer is just being compassionate with yourself. Mm. You know, my step is be as compassionate with yourself as I know you are with others.
Yes.
Because the way you are treating yourself, you would never treat someone else that way.
Right.
And so you have to be kind to yourself, ultra kind and giving, and just, you know, just know that you are not alone, that we are, you know, with you on this journey.
Mm. That's so good. You know, oftentimes we're looking for that magic thing, but you got to get quiet. We talk about that so much. This has been a blessing.
Yeah.
You've been a blessing. Now I see why so many people want to work with you, right? So what, describe your ideal client. Who are you looking for to work with? What do they sound like, look like? How, and then how can they reach you?
My ideal client is an academic, and that means doctoral student, faculty, administrator, or professional, mm-hmm. who is tackling a complex writing project, mm-hmm. whether that's a book that they're writing, whether that's a book they've been dying to write but feel like they can't write and they need someone to help them, or you have great ideas, but your grammar's not very good, mm-hmm. or your first language is not English, and you know you're brilliant, but it's not coming out on paper, mm-hmm. the way that you're thinking it. So mm-hmm. those are the ideal clients for me, is for me to be able to really help them shine in the way that they authentically do, but for whatever reason are either unable, unfocused, or just don't have the capacity at the moment to do it on their own. So those are the clients that I work with every day.
I love this. And where would they be able to reach you at?
So www.auroracheng.com.
Yeah.
Very uncommon name, AuroraChang.
Yeah.
And you can kind of see my work there and figure out, you know, how to contact me.
Yes. Well, we will definitely link that. I love you even more because I feel even more connected with you because I know more of your story. And stories do matter.
Thank you so much.
Stories matter.
Absolutely. They're everything.
They're everything.
They're everything.
You know, I love when you said that when you do that, you show up as you, you give other people permission to do the same. That reminds me of that poem, Our Deepest Fear, by Marianne Williamson, is that, you know, when we show up as our true authentic selves, we give other people permission to do the same. Thank you for giving me even more permission to be my serious, crazy self. And I'm so grateful for you being on the podcast today.
Well, and I'm grateful for you, Diana. Thank you so much.
Yes, thank you. Oh, so good. Thank you so much for tuning in today. We are so grateful to you being a part of our community. We'd love to hear from you. Share a few words. We'll make certain we'll link Dr. Aurora's website here so that you can get a hold of her. I'm certain that she would love to hear from you, and we would love to hear from you too. Like, subscribe, share this podcast, and we'll catch you next time. Thank you for being with me today. If you found value in this podcast, be sure to like and subscribe to be notified of weekly content. You can also learn more and follow along with me on any social media channel and by going to risewithdiana.com. Thank you.